Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
8th Thursday, the 9th of February. Hello and welcome to DW's Africa Link program with me, Jane Ayeko Kumet in Bonn, Germany.
And I'm Sala Oneko with what's trending on social media today.
Coming up, Tanzania's government plans to take legal action against former colonizer Germany.
The idea here is to compensate those who lost their lives. And of course, there are some surviving victims of the war.
And we've got lots of comments from you, the listeners, on all our topics that we're covering today.
And we will be back shortly after hearing what has been happening around the world.
I'm Mark Caldwell with the DW News. In Kenya, the High Court has blocked a decision by the government to close the Dadaab refugee camp and force Somali refugees to return home. The court ruled that targeting refugees was illegal, discriminatory, and unconstitutional, and that the shutdown had been ordered without proper consultation. The decision came after a case brought by rights organisations, including the government-funded Kenya National Commission on Human Rights. Victor Kamau is a member of their legal team.
We are happy with the judgment. We hope the government will now listen and be guided by that judgment and follow the law.
The new president of The Gambia, Adamo Barrow, has confirmed that his country will reverse its withdrawal from the International Criminal Court. This was tweeted by a senior European official after a meeting with the president. The Gambia, under former leader Yahya Jammeh, began withdrawing from the ICC, along with Burundi and South Africa, last year. Under its new leadership, the Gambia has been promised €75 million in European Union aid. Development aid ministers from Sweden, Belgium, the Netherlands and Denmark are expected to attend a 50-nation international conference in March to raise money for charities providing access to safe abortion. The meeting was called in response to US President Donald Trump's reintroduction of the global gag rule, which bans foreign charities from using US funds for abortion services, information and counselling. One Dutch source said Trump's ban would cause an annual funding gap of €600 million. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. The International Committee of the Red Cross, the ICRC, has suspended operations in Afghanistan after gunmen shot and killed six local staff members in Drazjan in the north of the country near the border with Turkmenistan. The incident happened on Wednesday morning and two other staff members are missing. Thomas Glass is the ICRC spokesman in Kabul.
We need to regroup. We need to be together to mourn the losses of our colleagues. But more importantly, we need to assess the impact this despicable attack will have on the future of our activities here.
In South Africa, in just under an hour from now, President Jacob Zuma is set to deliver his annual State of the Nation address to Parliament in Cape Town. The government has deployed 440 troops in a bid to prevent violent clashes outside the Parliament building. The opposition Democratic Alliance has condemned the deployment as a security state show of force. Zuma's State of the Nation address was disrupted in 2016 and 2015. For more news and information, please visit our website dw.com. I'm Mark Caldwell.
You're listening to DW's Africa Link program with me, Jane Ayeko Kumet.
And me, Sala Oneko.
Now, could it be time for former colonial masters to pay for the atrocities committed during colonial rule in Africa? In 2013, the British government apologized for acts of torture committed against Kenyans fighting for liberation. It paid the equivalent of just over $21 million to the victims. Namibia is still negotiating with Germany to do the same. And now Tanzania is also threatening to take legal action. I've been speaking to Tanzania's Defence Minister Hussein Mwinyi, and I started by asking him, why now?
Well, this came as a result of a question that was asked in Parliament by one of the members from the Lindi region, who wanted to know as to whether the government is prepared to ask the German government to compensate those who are affected during the Maji-Maji War.
So is this a consideration, or you've already reached a conclusion that you're going to take action?
No. As Ministry of Defense, as National Service, we will write to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs so that they can take the matter up with the German government.
So what exactly do you expect from the German side?
Well, compensation is what we are looking for. And there are few examples in the African region of countries that have asked for this compensation. So we are hoping to put this forward to the German government.
Should your compensation come through, as you're hopeful, how would this be utilized to benefit the victims? Or is this something that's going to go to the National Treasury to the benefit of the whole country?
No, the idea here is to compensate those who lost their lives. And, of course, there are some surviving victims of the war.
How soon do you think the process could start?
I've already promised the House that I'm going to write immediately to the Minister of Foreign Affairs, and I'm hoping they'll take up the issue as soon as possible.
I was speaking to Tanzanian Defence Minister Hussein Mwinyi, and I'm sure Sela has something to say to that effect.
Yes, this topic got a lot of mixed responses from Tanzanians on the Facebook page of our Kiswahili service, DW Kiswahili. And Pascal Principal writes, "Where were they all this time that they now raise this issue? If Tanzania wants to be compensated on those claims, were there no other countries who have been ruled before by other countries and its citizens were killed? How do they consider the aid provided by that country?" And Omari Ndongo writes, "To claim compensation whereby there is a lot of corruption in every corner is just to benefit a few. This is gone because those abused are no longer alive." But there are also people like, for example, Freddie Mtashi, who writes, "Kenyans have been compensated by the British, so Tanzanians should stand firm and be compensated." And innocent Yona Isaiah writes, "Germany should pay compensation for the evil they have done to us."
Interesting and mixed views over there. So we remain within the region, and now we go to Kenya, where the German African Business Summit is underway in the capital, Nairobi. It is the first ever of its kind. Over 400 German business companies are taking part in the meeting. Top on the agenda is Africa's economic growth prospects, regional economic integration, innovation and financing opportunities. Andrew Wasike reports.
The German African Business Summit 2017, the first ever forum held on African soil, is currently underway in Nairobi, Kenya, and it is dedicated to strengthening trade and investment ties between Africa and Germany. "We are here to renew our business ties with Africa," German Development Minister Gerd Müller told DW on the sidelines of the summit in Nairobi, Kenya, adding that Africa should strive to create a favorable environment for conducting business by getting rid of corruption.
"The East African region, with Kenya at its heart, is the anchor of stability and economic growth in this region. We expect the countries here to meet the necessary conditions to create a favorable environment for entrepreneurship, for private sector investments, and for young companies and entrepreneurs. And that is why we need to see progress made on anti-corruption, and legal certainty has to be created for companies."
"Rechtssicherheit für ausländische Investoren bieten."
Dennis Awori, the chairman of the Kenya Private Sector Alliance and vice chair of the East African Business Council, shared his expectation with me.
"My expectations are very high, and they include the establishing of partnerships between Kenyan, East African companies and German companies in the area of setting up value addition for some of our products and manufacturing for some of the German products, as well as increased trade."
Compared to other world economies, Germany's investment in Africa still lags behind. Africa still has a large untapped market, especially in renewable energy, mining, agriculture, and healthcare. So far, only 1,000 out of over 400,000 German companies are present in Africa. On the other hand, East African companies are targeting the German market and look forward to establishing business partnerships.
Andrew Wasike in Nairobi. Now, during the same occasion, the German ambassador to Kenya, Jutta Frasch, and the Kenyan Minister of Education, Fred Matiang'i, signed an agreement to set up a University of Applied Science for the region. The long-term cooperation project will be implemented in Kenya and will offer programs that match the needs of the country and the region.
And some of our Facebook followers on DW Africa commented on this story as well. And there was a comment from Adim Welsaimibi, who wrote, "It will take a long time to get the yields of the so-called renewed African ties." And then there was Jack Cross, who said, "Africa needs trade, not aid." So hopefully we're on the right path there.
Yeah, very positive comments there. I would have the same opinion, certainly. But first, we go to the U.S., where President Donald Trump has broken the ice with the Chinese President Xi Jinping. In his letter to Jinping, Trump said he looked forward to constructive relations. Previously, Trump had threatened to slap tariffs on Chinese imports and had accused Beijing of stealing U.S. jobs. Now, the two have not yet spoken to each other since Trump took office on 20th of January. Mark Oldwell has that report.
U.S. President Donald Trump and Chinese President Xi Jinping have yet to speak directly since Trump took office in late January. There are a number of areas where China fears Trump could go off course. They include Taiwan, which China considers a wayward province with no right to formal diplomatic relations with any country. Trump upset China in December by taking a call from Taiwanese President Tsai Ing-wen. There is also the issue of trade. Trump has threatened to slap tariffs on Chinese imports, accusing Beijing of devaluing its yuan currency and stealing American jobs. During his election campaign, Trump hinted at more protectionist policies, saying he would favour a massive 45% tariff on Chinese imports. These remarks stoked concerns about a potential trade battle between the US and China, concerns that are shared by Gu Zhongming, president of the Academy of International Trade and Cooperation at the Chinese Ministry of Commerce.
Once a large-scale trade war breaks out, we think both sides will suffer and neither of them will get away unharmed. We believe open and inclusive cooperation is the only path to China's economic transition and the U.S. economic recovery.
Trump failed to issue greetings to the Chinese people on the occasion of the Lunar New Year, unlike his predecessors Barack Obama and George W. Bush. This triggered speculation in China as to whether Trump was being deliberately disrespectful. In his letter, Trump evidently sought to make amends by wishing the Chinese people a prosperous Lunar New Year of the Rooster. After confirming that it had received Trump's letter, China said on Thursday it attached great importance to ties with the United States.
Mark Oldwell with that report. And Sela will take us through with some of the comments that you've been putting on our Facebook.
Yes, exactly. And back to the story which we had before about the High Court decision to stop the Kenyan government from shutting down the refugee camp Dadaab.
Mm-hmm. I know that is one of the largest camps in the world. What have people been saying, Sela?
It is the largest, and it has caused quite some discussion on the web and on our Facebook page as well, DW Africa, where Mwanje Enoch says, "Too wise a decision. We are all aliens to the world, so we could as well be refugees," I think she's saying.
Yeah, certainly.
Yes, and on Twitter, this topic was trending in the morning when the news broke, and there was a comment from Mark Wegerif who said, "Great decisions for the refugees. The closure of Dadaab refugee camp blocked by the court. Congrats to the Kenyan National Commission on Human Rights." And I mean, there's also some people are commenting that this also is good news to refugees who were stuck in the limbo because several of them were affected by the Trump's ban on Somali nationals, which because some of them were going to be repatriated to the US. So although staying in Dadaab is, of course, not what these people want, mm-hmm. they're at least not being deported back to Somalia at the moment.
Yeah, and many of them have really no other place than Dadaab. They call it their home.
Exactly. Several people have grown up there and lived mm-hmm. there for generations. And there was a comment by Chimwenitan, who said Kenya had plans to shut down Dadaab refugee camp with the Somalia Trump ban. Where do they stand now? That was a couple of days ago.
So that is certainly good news for now, and we look forward to even better news, probably in terms of improving the conditions of Dadaab. We will get back to that a little later after this break. This is DW Africa Link coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany, with me, Jane Ayeko Kumet.
And me, Sela Oneko.
Still to come, protests surround South Africa's parliament ahead of President Zuma's State of Nation address.
A sense of paranoia has set in. A president who's terrified of parliament, terrified of the opposition on his own benches and on the opposition benches, and is desperate to through a show of force.
And I will take on right away with that story. Now, in South Africa, President Jacob Zuma is about to deliver his eighth State of Nation address in Cape Town. But outside Parliament and the surrounding areas, there is a hive of activity. Zuma's loyalists, economic freedom fighters, supporters, and those opposed to nuclear power deals with Russia have staged separate protests. This is there's heavy police and military deployment around the area. Sobri Govender brings us that report.
Every year, hundreds of soldiers participate in the pomp and ceremony preceding the delivery of the State of the Nation addresses. There has been no controversy about this. But this year, a special contingent of 441 soldiers has been deployed around the parliamentary precinct solely to curb any protests against President Jacob Zuma. This development has raised anger among parliamentary opposition parties and civil society organizations, claiming Zuma's action is a complete misuse of the military resources. John Steenason is the Democratic Alliance opposition leader in parliament.
A sense of paranoia has set in. A president who's terrified of parliament, terrified of the opposition on his own benches and on the opposition benches, and is desperate to through a show of force to try and reassert his authority using military might.
The Speaker of Parliament, Ms. Baleka Mbete, responding to the overwhelming condemnation of the move to deploy soldiers, confirmed that the soldiers will be on standby to support the police contingent.
Those people will not be anywhere around Parliament, and they simply are allowed to be wherever they ought to be as soldiers, in places we never really are worried or even conscious of as parliament, because where we focus is the events within the precinct, within the house.
The deployment of the soldiers has added further ammunition to activist and civil society organizations who have intensified their caricature of Zuma as a failed president who should step down immediately. But Zuma is unconcerned and told journalists that he would deliver his State of the Nation address as planned.
How you feel about the president is a different matter. If you are a politician, we have time to talk. So to me, that is understood. I think I've been a politician for a while and I know what it means. So no pressure.
In his official address, Zuma is expected to announce plans for radical economic transformation that would allow for black South Africans to become greater players in the mainstream business sector. Zuma is also expected to announce plans for rapid land transfer from the white minority to the black majority.
Sobri Govender reporting. Now, Sela, considering that I personally look at South Africa as one of Africa's most developed country in terms of economics and democracy, I'm sure people have been commenting on this.
Yes, and if you want to see how South Africans are discussing this on Twitter, you'll find a lot under the hashtag SONA2017, SONA standing for the State of the Nation address. Mm-hmm. And the address starts in less than an hour from now, but security has been tight throughout the day, as you've just heard. And South African political analyst Ryan Cummings tweeted some hours ago, "Nothing captures SONA 2017 more than having security, more security than MPs at Parliament, while nearby townships are suffering from chronic underpolicing."
Isn't that interesting? So
yeah.
I suppose every person has about 5 policemen.
Possibly. And Nelly Nkulana posted a picture of herself protesting outside the place in Cape Town and carrying a placard reading, "Hear us, prioritize youth." And the Musi Maimane, the opposition leader, also gave a speech of his own, which was posted on the Democratic Alliance Party Facebook page.
Can you hint on what he said?
Yes, he spoke about the South African youth as a lost generation which needs rescuing. So there's a lot of effort on where is South Africa going.
Mm-hmm. Lost generation or not, those are his comments. We shall now go to some other topic. Now, land is central to the livelihoods of millions of people in Africa. Today, land grabs are one of the biggest issues in the continent. Africa certainly needs foreign investment to grow its economy. So over the past years, African governments have welcomed foreign companies with the promise of abundant land. But this has often resulted in displacing many communities. Today, rights and resources in Institute has released a report titled From Risk and Conflict to Peace and Prosperity. Its major finding is that forcing local people off their land drives almost two-thirds of conflicts between companies and local communities in Africa. Emmanuel Landis brings us the details on this critical issue.
Many investors see Africa as the last frontier for cheap land, and many governments view foreign direct investment as a means to promote economic growth. But cheap land often means displacing entire communities to make way for hydropower plants, agro-industrial plantations, mining operations and other projects. In its annual report, called From Risk and Conflict for Peace and Prosperity, on the urgency of securing community land rights, the Rights and Resources Initiative wants governments and investors to devise means to address the concerns of local people so as to avoid conflict and instability that could deter investors. Andy White is a coordinator from Rights and Resources Initiative. He was in Dakar for the launch of the report.
On one hand, you still have government promoting the types of investments that don't respect land rights. So that's one unfortunate finding. And another finding is that when these local land rights are not respected, then it does damage to local people and their livelihoods, and it also promotes conflict.
Based on an in-depth review of 37 case studies from West, East and Southern Africa, Rights and Resources Initiative found that 63% of disputes related to private sector land and natural resource investments in Africa began when communities were forced to leave their lands. It's something Ibrahim Asek has experienced firsthand. He's the president of the Natural Federation for Organic Agriculture. In Senegal, 96% of produce is cultivated by small family farms, he says, who depend on their crops for their livelihood.
We know that today there's an extraordinary amount of land takeovers of the family farms, an abusive expropriation that we are denouncing and we stand up to so that we can retake our land, or at least stay on the land that hasn't been acquired yet.
Nearly 70% of Senegal's population works in agriculture. A 2012 report by agricultural non-profit Grain found that 460,000 hectares, or 12% of Senegal's arable land, was in the hands of foreign interests.
Emmanuel Landes in Dakar.
Uzon.
Sports betting has become a multi-billion business in Africa. In Ghana, many young people are attracted to the game to the extent that they even risk their school fees on the bets. Authorities are worried and want to close all betting centres that operate illegally. Isaac Kalechi met up with some of the young gamblers.
Baba Seydou is 19 years old. He started gambling 2 years ago.
Someday I'm sitting, I just feel like betting. And I won that day. That's what let me start. I won it. Oh, I made money. But I lose to a lot. I lose a lot.
Seydou isn't happy with what he does, and he's discouraging anyone who would want to start.
Someone will come here, he take his food money and bet. At the end of the time, the bet is spoiled. Where will you get his money to eat? I don't know, but if you want to start, don't start. Because you'll be looking for money to come and bet. Every time, you'll be looking for money to come and bet.
Another young gambler is Idrisu Musa. He is 20 years old. Musa was influenced by his friends to start betting.
I just decide, like you see that England, they are playing match in Spanish, and so I start watching football before then. Then my friends told me that they are playing bet, so I started playing it. I helped my father to work. So if he give me some small money, then I can do the bet.
Having lost more than he has won, Musa has not told his parents about what he does and is not ready to do so. The Gaming Commission of Ghana has launched a campaign to close down all gambling centers operating illegally. The main aim of the campaign is to ensure that those legalized to operate do so by preventing young people from getting involved. An attendant at the betting center I visited told me some of the involvement of young people is getting out of hand as many of them spend their school fees on gambling.
I think it's quite disturbing and worried, since you can't be given a school fees and then you use it to gamble. It's a bit worried.
For now, the campaign to get rid of illegal gambling centres and preventing young people from gambling is underway, and it's only a matter of time before we see progress.
Isaac Kalechi in Ghana.
Speaking out.
And if you thought African women lived in a cultural limbo, you might have been wrong. Gone are the days when tradition was not questioned. For, as the title says, speaking out, times are changing and so are the people. In South Sudan, women are indeed speaking out by contesting the practice of being inherited by their late husband's brothers, as has been the norm. Now, the women want the government to intervene and ban the practice. Their wish is to remarry the men of their choice. James Shimanyula with that report.
In South Sudan, widows are crying loudly. They want the government to abolish what they characterize as obnoxious customary inheritance law to pave the way for them to remarry elsewhere after their husbands' deaths. Mary Mabior Deng, aged 32, says the government should act now and abolish the age-old inheritance customary law.
The life we are going through, it is not easy life. Government should come in and come and really sympathize with the widows. We are suffering because this is now too much. It is beyond. We are all human beings, whereby we have also our rights. And I say, such cultures are not good. I'm pleading for the government, any other individuals who can come in and save our life.
24-year-old Agneta Lokudu discloses that the culture of inheritance forced her to marry her dead husband's brother.
When my husband passed away, I was not happy to stay in this home because I knew I was going to lead a miserable life because that was not my love. They make me to stay because I was married by cattle, 17 cattle. I was told if a woman has been married by cattle, even if your husband passed away, it's a must. You remain in that home.
But 20-year-old Elizabeth McQuay says she refused to be married by another man after her husband died.
I decided that at this age of mine, why should I take another man while my children are already big?
Justin Lokoding, himself a human rights activist in his 30s, deviated from his activism and asserted explicitly that it is better for widows to be inherited as per the country's culture.
Nothing is there at where a woman is after a husband passed away. So she should undergo that. She'd be inherited by a certain man, a man from the same clan.
Commenting on the widow's cries, pleading with the government to abolish the culture of inheritance, South Sudan Information Minister Michael McQuay defended the upholding of customary law that falls under the umbrella of South Sudan traditional culture.
Any woman who wants to go against the customary law, there is nowhere where the government comes in.
A report by James Shimanyula on that very touching issue, and I do hope that something happens. But Tella, tell us what's happening on social media.
Yes, one topic that was trending this morning on Kenyan Twitter was President Uhuru Kenyatta's newest voter registration video, because the video shows Kenyatta dancing with a group of young dancers, and he's apparently targeting the youth there to get them to vote and to get them to register for voting. And
I think President Kenyatta is a lively person. He's always engaged in with youth activities. He's playing football. He's dancing. I think he's a happy man, isn't he?
He is. But it got quite a negative response on social media.
Oh, really?
Because people are saying, why is the president and dancing when the doctors are striking and people are going hungry and so on? And so there's a comment from Danum Biti Salome who writes, I'm really starting to think President Uhuru doesn't live in Kenya. Why is he dabbing? Who are his advisors? Hashtag misplaced priorities. Hashtag dab of shame, which is a hashtag which was trending this morning.
The elections are not so far away. Let's see how the dancing continues, and we have to leave it at that for now, Sela.
Yes, please comment on any of our topics we've been covering on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
And from me, Jane Ayeka-Kumet, and the rest of the team, have a nice evening.